Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
So have you ever shuffled your, on a dry day, shuffled your feet across the carpet as a kid to get an electrical charge, right? You're shuffling your feet, and then you go up to the light switch and you touch the light switch and you get a little spark, right? You touch the light switch and a little spark. But if you turn around and touch it again right after that, the spark's gone. The spark's gone. Well, you can start shuffling your feet again and develop a charge, but you were there before you shuffled your feet and you were there after you discharged the spark. And what do I mean by this? What am I talking about? I'm talking about your ego, really, your ego. Because the day you were born as a precious little one, you didn't have an ego. You didn't have an opinion. You didn't have favorite kind of ice cream. Well, you didn't have an ego, a sense of self in you just didn't have an ego that could be happy or sad. I mean, sure, kids can do that when they're right out of the gate, it's more of a more basic, rudimentary thing. But the day you were born, you didn't have an ego, and you literally grew an ego. And you might think that your ego is a personal experience, but I would suggest your ego is a unique experience, because there's 7 or 8 billion egos on the planet. There's nothing personal about having an ego, but your ego is unique. The reason I bring this up is you're not your ego. When your soul chose to be born here on planet Earth, there you are right there, your soul. Your soul decided to be born into Earth, to have the human experience. And then as a consolation prize, you get an ego. But you're not your ego. The reason I bring this up tonight, and I think we're going to have quite a conversation tonight. The topic tonight is exploring your end-of-life options. And our guest tonight is Elizabeth Uslander. We're going to bring her on in just a minute. But when we cross over, when we pass, when we die, that ego sense of self no longer has the human experience. But your soul is still there. I mean, there's thousands of near-death experiences and people talking to deceased loved ones. Your essence, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Your essence doesn't die. It's your earthly persona, your earthly ego, perhaps. I think we're going to have quite a conversation, like I said, and we should probably get into it. Again, the topic tonight is exploring your end-of-life options, and our guest is Elizabeth Uslander. Elizabeth and her husband, Dr. Bob Uslander, co-founded Empowered Endings, a unique palliative and end-of-life care model addressing the physical, emotional, intellectual, and spiritual needs of patients and families. Together, they are on a mission to to transform the end-of-life experience, helping individuals and their loved ones move beyond fear and discomfort when facing a serious illness or the end of life so they can live as full, present, and peaceful as possible. I think we should just get into it. Join me in welcoming Elizabeth to the show. Elizabeth, it's so nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Les. It's wonderful to be here. I love the description that you shared. That really nails it on everything that we're up to.
Can you share your background and, if you choose, your husband's background? Because that'll reflect on your experience and expertise in the topic, please.
Absolutely. So my husband is a physician of over 30 years. He was an ER doc for 25 years, and about 10 years ago, he moved into palliative care and hospice. My experience is a broad range, actually. It's kind of more of a long, winding road. It starts with an early spiritual practice and extensive spiritual study in a wide variety of traditions, including Eastern and Western. Having my first Hindu guru at the age of 4, my first Lakota Sioux shaman at the age of 12, and living in Sri Lanka studying Buddhism at the age of 16 on a fellowship, and just on from there. After I went to seminary, I decided not to go into ministry in the church for a variety of reasons and ended up taking a little bit of a left turn and going into social work. And the intersection of spiritual care and social work landed me in palliative and end-of-life care. And so since then, I've been an advocate for agency and dignity in these spaces of complex and terminal illness, in particular for patients and families. And that's actually how I met my husband. We worked together to support a patient who was looking for options in his end-of-life journey. And we found ways to support him and educate him, and he educated us actually on what was possible. And we started working in partnership ever since then. And out of the 7 years of practice together in medical care and counseling and end of life and palliative care, we've built Empowered Endings, which, as you say, is designed to transform the way that we as a society approach palliative and, in particular, end-of-life care. And my heart is very deeply committed to supporting the transformation in grief and bereavement experiences, which is particularly informed by the loss of a number of loved ones in my life, including my daughter's father when she was a young child.
Nice. Well, now, I'd like to get clear on terms as we start a conversation up so the audience can understand what we're talking about. Can you give us a definition of palliative?
Sure. So palliative care is a field of medicine that has actually only recently been introduced, last 10, 20 years, into the insurance model. It's an interdisciplinary field where you have doctors, nurses, social workers, and spiritual counselors working together to support patients and their loved ones in experiencing a palliation, an ease of their physical and existential distress. So palliative care is typically provided in clinics, and people can go to their palliative care clinic to get pain management and also explore their options, their treatment options, and make decisions about which options are the best for them. So palliative care is for people who are doing curative treatment as well as people who are not necessarily doing aggressive or curative care.
So is it always related to somebody who's about to check out, or, I mean, where their life expectancy isn't considered to be substantial?
Not for palliative care. Palliative care can be something that people experience for an extended period of time. Hospice, specifically is a Medicare benefit, and hospice requires a short-term terminal prognosis. So you have to have two doctors qualify you for a life expectancy of 6 months or less in order to receive hospice, which is also interdisciplinary care. The issue that we encountered, Bob as a physician in palliative care and hospice and myself as a social worker and bereavement counselor in hospice and home health, was that the insurance model actually has pretty substantial limitations. Hospice hasn't changed much in the last 40 years except to become more regulated and more bottom line based. So while it offers incredible benefit, there are also limitations to what people can receive with hospice care. They don't necessarily have a personal relationship with a physician who's overseeing their care. They don't necessarily have companionship, like from end-of-life doulas, providing emotional and spiritual support for the patients and families. There isn't necessarily personalized family support throughout that journey where families can get their questions answered and anxieties assuaged as things come up. So there are a number of things that are missing in the insurance-based model, and that's part of what we try to create, is a space where people can get what they need, even if it's not necessarily offered by the traditional healthcare system. And that's part of the movement that we are not the only ones a part of, but definitely a part of, trying to change the way that we experience palliative and end-of-life care in our society.
Nice. And one other term, end-of-life doula. Can you put some context to that?
Oh, for sure. So end-of-life doulas are an incredible, there's an incredible population of people who, many of whom have experience in hospice care, some of whom are deeply passionate about it. Maybe they have a personal experience that's really shaped their interest in serving patients and families in this space. I think the easiest way to contextualize it is to parallel it to the birthing movement, where 40 years ago, birthing was a matter of an OBGYN, a pregnant mother, and a hospital setting, and no family, no holistic options, no an enhancement of the experience. It was a very medicalized experience. And then the birthing movement happened in the 70s, and now you have holistic birthing centers where birth midwives and birth doulas can walk a family, a pregnant mother and their whole family, through a planning process and a birthing process that requires, if that's their choice, very little medical care, mostly just doctors to make sure that the baby is safe and the mother is safe, and the rest can be an entirely holistic experience. So what death doulas or end-of-life doulas are doing is bringing that holistic planning and presence to end-of-life care. What's most interesting about it to us is that there's no mechanism yet in the medical field for end-of-life doulas to participate in the end-of-life journey. They can become hospice volunteers or they can have a private practice, but there are no medical systems that are partnering with end-of-life doulas except for our medical practice, and in particular, my husband, who's a doctor, who partners with doulas who have a variety of experience, professional and personal, in palliative care and hospice, in order to really integrate this holistic companionship, guidance, and care into the journey. So it's not just a doctor, it's not just a nurse, it's really a holistic wraparound experience of being supported and guided and honored in your own values and wishes throughout.
And not only the person transitioning, but the family dynamic or the, whatever their personal life looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. The family is something that's really, family support is missing in the medical system. You know, insurance billing really determines what's available, and there's no insurance billing for family care partners. So people who are navigating journeys like dementia, which is a long journey, or cancer, which can be a very long and complicated journey, all kinds of different journeys that are complex and sometimes result in terminal illness. Those families don't have anywhere to go. They don't have any support. They don't have anyone to call and ask the questions that come up in the middle of the night or, you know, certainly outside of the regular working hours. And that leads to a lot of trauma, a lot of fear, a lot of struggle and stress that is really unnecessary. And actually, there are studies increasingly that show proper care for the family, proper care for the care partners, proper care for bereaved loved ones improve health outcomes long term. So the relief of or prevention of that stress and trauma can actually support the entire society in better health outcomes and healthier ways of living and being through the journey of loss and beyond.
Nice. Well, now let's flip it over to our audience side perspective, our audience's perspective. So maybe I'm a business professional and I'm busy, hurry, scurry, and mom and our dad's about to buy the farm and pass away. I don't know what to do with it. I mean, I'm watching my folks go through this stress and this ailment. Since you swim in the pond, so to speak, since you have been immersed in this community, can you share with us some examples of how death comes upon us? In the sense that the listener can see that they're not alone in some of the uniqueness of how death can happen?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing is that, you know, we all are born and we all die. And so ultimately at a conceptual level, we're never alone in death, because it's one of the few things that is universal in the human experience. I think really importantly, communicating with our loved ones about it, facing our own mortality long before it becomes an urgent issue or a crisis can be really valuable. It's sometimes scary to talk about death because I think there's a little bit of a sense in our society that if we talk about it, it will almost make it happen or make it more possible. But ultimately, it will happen and it is possible. And when we're able to explore it, we have the opportunity to create something that is really aligned with who we are and how we live, and to be able to die in a way with our loved ones aligned with our values and goals and wishes that we've set forth through those conversations, through those explorations. So I think finding safe ways to talk about it with friends, with family, even with physicians who are open to it, can really help us to assuage some of those fears and unearth some of the truths about how we want to live and how we want to die and how those things can be aligned.
And sometimes people who are going through the death process or they see it coming, so to speak, sometimes they're kind of scared and you might bring it up and they might not want to talk about it. I mean, how do you approach that? I mean, ultimately, if they're scared, it can build up sort of a wall of communication, and that fear is happening on the inside of them. So their white knuckle grip on the fear can not necessarily be anxious to let go of that fear. what kind of things can help alleviate people who have a fearful disposition towards transitioning?
Well, I think the first thing that I would say is it's most important to honor people and meet them where they are. So some people will die with fear because that's what they choose, and that's okay. It's not necessarily what we as people who love them or want to support them would prefer, but it is, I think, really important to honor people's choice. And the way that I tend to explore those spaces and help people come to comfort with them is by creating a sense of safety and connection. I think in general, fear is a matter of not feeling safe. And when we're able to connect deeply from a human space to a human space, those fears can sometimes drift away. And what's really there is whatever the truth that is maybe something someone doesn't want to know or think or explore can come to light. And they can have that sense of security in expressing it and exploring it in a way that allows them to move through it by embracing it and experiencing it. But knowing that they're safe and supported is one of the things that I think my experience is that most empowers people to feel that sense of clarity and willingness to be with themselves, is knowing that someone else is there with them. So it's not so much a matter of specific words or specific actions, it's really presencing and inviting people to feel that strong sense of connection at that deep soul level and letting them know that whatever they're experiencing, we can be there with them, and whatever it is that they need to walk through, we can walk through it with them.
Nice. Well, if someone is at death's door and it seems inevitable, I mean, I would think online videos of near-death experiences where people are on an operating room table that, you know, the doctor says they're dead and they leave their body and they see God or whoever, and then they get sent back and they go back in their body to watch an NDE or near-death experience videos of people sharing that process. That can kind of take away some of the mystery of it, because you might have been raised in a household that was, you know, hellfire and brimstone, and if you took whatever your religion's measuring stick and weighed it against your life, you're thinking, oh crap, I'm going to hell. And then 10, 20 years into your adult life, you let go of that, but you haven't really replaced it with anything. So there's kind of an unknowingness. Perhaps NDE videos might help you bring some context to it, and that might help you with the fear. So, time scoots along. Why don't we jump into the actual end-of-life options? Do you want to go through that list?
Sure. And I'd also love to come back to NDEs. But I think in terms of options, one of the things that is frequently missing is life-enhancing options. So traditional and holistic therapies, hospices will sometimes offer this or that, but it's really hard to find everything that you want, and it's hard to find things like physical therapy or other kinds of traditional therapies that are not necessarily covered by the hospice benefit, because when you go on hospice, you effectively forfeit any kind of curative treatment, including the kinds of things like physical therapy that would help maintain stability, mobility, safety in movement, as well as other things like acupuncture and massage and music therapy, all of which we've found to be really powerful connection and healing opportunities and therapies in people's journey, wherever they are in that end of life or final chapter phase. And then there are legal end of life options like medical aid in dying, which is legal in 10 states and Washington, D.C., so 11 jurisdictions in the U.S. And that is an option by which people can request medication from a physician who walks them through a process of evaluating all of their options, and if they choose, ultimately prescribing a prescription of medication that will allow them to go to sleep and allow their life to come to a very natural and quick close. It's an option that is often called death with dignity. And then there are also options like voluntarily stopping eating and drinking for people who may not qualify for medical aid in dying or for whom taking medication is not something that feels comfortable to them. Choosing to stop eating and drinking at the end of life is one of the ways that one can allow for a natural transition. And it's really when it's well supported medically and psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, and in terms of the family support and the grief guidance, it can be a really beautiful and gentle journey. But it's so little talked about and so little supported that it's not something that people really are aware they can choose in that journey. So there are a few different legal options, and I think the most important thing is that people know there are options and that they can find information about them through, for example, our organization, Empowered Endings, but through other organizations as well, like Compassion and Choices, the Academy of Medical Aid in Dying Medicine, and lots of other organizations that support informing and resourcing people in their journeys.
Nice. Well, you were sharing before the show that you knew of a person that had chosen voluntary stopping eating and drinking, but you hinted on their character. It's almost like there's a character element to this passing in that the patient, I guess, or whoever's coming up, bumping up against the door, so to speak, your demeanor, your consciousness, your intentions can be a prominent element to it. I guess what I'm getting at is perhaps some people, when they see death coming, that they let go of the reins and don't know what to do, and they quit having an intention about it. And that story you shared, if you want to share it again, I mean, it really showed the intention of the person and how, it, from my perspective, it probably changed how that unfolded.
That is an incredible story, and I think it links to what you were speaking to at the beginning of this conversation, which is the question of who we understand ourselves to be. So my observation in spending a lot of time with a lot of patients and a lot of families, literally hundreds over the years, is that when people have a clear understanding of who they are and where they're going in their end-of-life transition, in their death, in their dying process, and especially a clear understanding that their loved ones, both the living loved ones and the predeceasing loved ones, are okay, they tend to transition in a gentler and quicker way. So the story that you're alluding to is that of a woman who we supported who had had a near-death experience when she was a 7-year-old child. And through this near-death experience, she came to very clearly understand where she was going to go when she passed. And when she came to us, she was elderly, had a constellation of medical conditions that were diminishing her capacity and her quality of life. And she chose to stop eating and drinking, which her family supported thoroughly and was supported medically and also by our team. And she passed very quickly, very, very quickly. And it made me start to think about what is the influence of our conscious understanding of what's happening or intention about what's happening in these journeys. And so I started observing anecdotally, I don't have any research to support this, just my sort of perspective and theory, but I started observing the difference between the experience of people who had a sense of security both in their life and in their death and in the transition between the two, and for their loved ones, again, the living and the predeceasing loved ones, versus people who had, as you were talking about earlier, some fears or sense of concern about what was happening and where they were going. And in my experience, the people who have a sense of clarity and comfort with the journey and with the process and with the outcome have a much gentler experience, and their loved ones feel more empowered because they don't have to stress and worry about the suffering or struggle that the patient, the person who is going through this transition, experiences. So my observation is that our belief about who we are and where we're going has a great deal to do with the experience of it, which is certainly my experience of life as a person who has had a near-death experience, as a person who has lived with chronic illnesses and worked through the healing of those things, and as a person who's supported a lot of people in a lot of different kinds of journeys. I think it's really clear that our consciousness has a great deal to do with our experience.
Nice. Well, you had mentioned you wanted to revisit the NDE topic. Is there more you want to say about that?
Well, I think mostly telling the story of that lady that we supported, I could share a little bit about my own experience. One point experienced a near transition where it was sort of absent my human experience and that version of my consciousness for an extended period of time. And I went to a space that was, the best way that I can describe it is a void, that was this sort of almost like floating in water, but rather than any kind of physical experience, there was an emptiness surrounding, but it was a warm and comforting space. And my experience with that has since informed, and of course was certainly informed by spiritual practices before that, but it's since informed my spiritual practices and the experience of death meditation, void meditation. There's an organization in Northern California called Sacred Stream. One of their practitioners does death hypnosis, which I think is akin to what I'm speaking to, where our consciousness can go to a space that is not necessarily connected to the sense of self, as you described it, the ego, the unique kind of personal way of being in which we typically tend to experience ourselves, and can go to a different experience, a space of perhaps universal consciousness, a space of absent time, absent ultimately space, actually, though that's one of the words that I'm using to describe it. I think we don't really have good verbiage for the spaces that are unfamiliar to the conscious mind and the human experience. But certainly my perspective on all of this has been informed by a great deal of personal experience, including that near-death experience that I had, where I was in that void, warmth, gentle comfort, emptiness for an extended period of time, and then came back to really recognize what my purpose was in life, which ultimately is to honor my children, support them in their journeys, and be of service in whatever way I can in sharing what I know and understand from the limited understanding that we each can only have.
Nice. I think I would add to that, I guess, my own personal experience in a little different context, in that about 12 years ago or whatever, my soul decided it was time for a lesson and took my consciousness and took it metaphorically up and 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 up in my sense of self, so to speak, all the way into light, L-I-G-H-T. And in that light, there was no thing. There was not a me. There was not a male. There was not a body. There was not time. There was not space. There was nothing, nothing whatsoever. Pure consciousness. And I remember being in that space, and it's a very beautiful sensation. And then after a while, I returned to my sense of self, my traditional persona, so to speak. And what that showed me is everything about our human experience is a subset of a much bigger truth of who we are, regardless of the narrative or just really anything at all that can or could happen to us is not us in the ultimate sense. The I don't know what you'd call it, the source consciousness at the core of your persona. And I only share that as yet another example of experience, in that the ego, this me that we all have is only relative during this incarnation, and there's a much, much bigger sense of self that has been there before we were born, during the whole flipping rodeo, and will the continuity of our consciousness is assured. Thank God our egos cannot touch that, I guess I'd call it divine essence within us. Well, now we've talked about end-of-life options. Where will you experience your end-of-life journey? I mean, how can you manage pain and others distressing symptoms? What are some of the other contexts that we can become intentional about when it comes to our passing?
I think the continuity of consciousness is a really interesting place to start. I think understanding who we are and understanding what's important to us and being able to communicate that, express it to our loved ones, our care providers, has a great deal to do with what we experience and where we experience it. Interestingly, my experience with Eastern traditions suggests that the consciousness that you experienced in that light is much the same as the consciousness I experienced in that darkness, in that void. And you know, I'm very grounded in the Taoist tradition, which speaks to the balance and the way of nature. And I think that there's a lot there to explore in terms of balance, which also speaks to the question that you asked in terms of where we are. Different people will have different ways of navigating, planning, and experiencing their journeys. Some people will want to do everything and use all of the resources of the medical system to stay alive and well as long as they can. Some people will want to do many things, perhaps nothing aggressive or life-limiting, but certainly sustaining as long as they can. Other people will want to experience a sense of ease and comfort, not necessarily engaging treatments, not necessarily going to the hospital, doing their best to stay at home, surrounded by their comfortable surroundings and family and environment. And some people will want to move forward through this journey with a sense of kind of control and in as quickly and comfortably away as they can. So all of those options are available. And in order to determine what the best option is, I think it's just so important for people to have a sense of who they are, what their values are, what their goals in terms of their experience as they go through this transition might be, and to communicate that with their loved ones, with their powers of attorney, with their physicians who are going to be providing care for them throughout the journey, and really put in place the documents that help everybody understand and the resources and planning that support those things coming to fruition so that whatever your goals are, whatever your wishes are, whatever your experience is, that's what you get to have. And I think that's what really marks an empowered ending, is that each person has a different journey and a different path, and they get to decide how it's going to go.
So I'm sure there's a language or vocabulary to pretty much everything we've talked about tonight. As anyone who's ever used an online search engine, you don't always get the results that you expected.
Okay.
What are some key search terms that might not be obvious to help the listener find local resources about what we've been talking about? In other words, jeepers, it'd be nice to have a passing doula. I mean, what are some of the terms or language that you could use in a search engine to help find resources?
That's a great question. So for the work that we do, the search would be Empowered Endings. That will take you to our site, which has a great deal of resources. We provide medical care locally and regionally, which is in Southern California and throughout California. But we also have an institute that offers education, programming, resources, community, and a foundation that supports people who have financial obstacles to receiving the care that they need and deserve. There are also organizations like Compassion and Choices, which provide a lot of education and information about end-of-life options. There are organizations like Five Wishes, which actually have detailed questions about how you might wish to go through your end-of-life journey. One of the services that we provide is end-of-life planning, which is very detail-oriented and guided by doctors and doulas who have great experience in exploring what's possible and how to align your goals, wishes, and documentation accordingly. You could search end-of-life doulas or death doulas locally to explore who might be a good resource in planning and supporting your end-of-life journey in a holistic way outside of maybe the medical system. You could look for hospices locally that would provide Medicare benefit and other insurance benefit, medical care and support throughout the journey. Checking with your personal physician, whether you have a family practice doctor or if you're a person who has a specialist, asking your doctor, do you know anything about, can we organize advanced care planning and what are the options for my end-of-life journey in the state that I live in? So there are a lot of different ways to explore online, and I think, again, like Empowered Endings would be a great place to start in terms of finding all of the different kinds of resources that we're talking about and communities that cover nationwide options and opportunities to communicate about these things. And there are state-specific organizations like End of Life Choices California, End of Life Choices Oregon, End of Life Choices Washington, which are the three kind of primary, in my experience, primary states that offer end-of-life options, but they're nationwide. And so all of those would be great places to start.
Well, now, I was thinking about asking, are there online social communities where people could gather online and talk about this experience, but due to the general nature of the topic, it'd be hard to keep the membership numbers going up. But I mean, yes, for the person going through the transition, but I really get a sense, like we've talked about, that the family can might benefit from that. So you've talked about several online opportunities. Is there a social element to those where there can, you know, families talk to families, kind of a lateral experience?
Of the ones that I mentioned, the only one I'm aware of is the online community that the Empowered Endings Institute is about to launch. We've been planning the organization of this community for some time now, and we're on the verge, I think, in the next month or two of launching an online community where healthcare professionals, end-of-life practitioners, death doulas, care planners, estate care managers, all different kinds of people in terms of the professional space, but also community members, patients dealing with complex and terminal illness, family care partners, people who are supporting their loved ones through these journeys, will all be able to come together to have these conversations, to explore together, to support each other, and to understand more what's possible and what's available both locally and nationally. And we're also launching a resource library that's, I think, going to be very valuable for that community in particular, along with education programming that will speak to very specific needs and interests for each of those populations who are looking for more information, more access, more community, like you said, to explore together what it is that they want and need to know and understand.
Nice. Well, an hour can go by pretty fast. Now the time has come for you to share. You've been talking about empoweredendings.com, which is your website. But tell us about, I have a end-of-life options pamphlet that you and your husband has written. Shine the light on you and your services and your website so the audience knows how to engage.
Sure. Well, so for anyone in Southern California, we provide medical care and counseling, including doctor and doula support and interdisciplinary team support for palliative and end-of-life care journeys, including specializing in end-of-life options, dementia, aging, in-home support, all of the nurse case management, all those kinds of things. For people outside of the state, we can't provide medical care, but we can certainly provide education, community, and resources. And so the Empowered Endings Institute is designed as a platform for all of the education regarding everything, the wisdom of our experience, and the incredible care partners that we have. So many experts in the field, people who have been practicing end-of-life care, palliative care for literally longer than I've been alive, actually, and new fields of care like psychedelic medicine and other kinds of things that are coming into this space and providing different kinds of options and opportunities for people to really have the ability to choose what works best for them. So Empowered Endings, our medical group, our institute, our foundation are all built to support every community that we can, and the more we're able to build, the more we're able to support. So if people are looking for ways to support the movement, they can engage with our foundation, support education in their community, invite people to support the expansion of the services that we offer. If they're looking for community, they can join the online community, they can join our programming. We have a webinar, actually, that my husband is doing on end-of-life options with Empowered Endings on April 2nd, and people can sign up for our newsletter to get more information about it. The Exploring Your End-of-Life Options ebook that we wrote is the one I think that you referred to, which is also available online, and that really sort of in a detailed way outlines everything that I was talking about in terms of what the options are and where you might want to be and what you might want to consider in having these conversations. And then the end-of-life planning is something that we do also, you know, it's not strictly Southern California-based, so we can do that with people anywhere in the country who are looking to explore what it is that they would like to have clarified and documented and communicated for their journeys as they go forward.
Nice. Well, do you have any closing thoughts for our audience?
Well, I would just like to say thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity to connect with you and with the whole audience, and for the opportunity to share the work that we're doing. We're really passionate about connection and collaboration and partnership, and so every opportunity to participate in that is something that's really meaningful to us. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you. We've been talking with Elizabeth Uslander, and the topic tonight has been exploring your end-of-life options. What a delightful show. Elizabeth really has an excellent experience base in this topic, and so I was very delighted to have her on the show, and I have thoroughly enjoyed talking to her about this topic. Speaking of topics, now there's a context to this podcast, a premise that we weigh all our guests with, and that is, what helps the audience? What helps you, the listener? We really look for episodes that empower you, the listener, to grow your sense of self, to put more tools in your toolbox, to empower you, the listener, so you feel more empowered, more capable in your own life. So if you know somebody anywhere in the world, we've talked to people all over the world over the last 14 years. If you would like to recommend someone to be our guest on the show, you can send your recommendation to inquiries@newhumanliving.com. Well, that was delightful. So even if you're not bumping up against death's door, what's your life about? Don't tell me, tell you. What's your life about? How do you feel about your life? The collective consciousness of humanity has had the proverbial rototiller stirred up over the last several years. There's so much change going on in humanity. I bet there's a lot of people whose life purpose is changing or is about to change. And I can certainly speak for myself. I've worked in broadcast television for decades, and yet even now I'm getting new downloads, or whatever you want to say, new visions for my life. And I share this because you might be going through the same thing. When I was first inspired to do something different, write a book, I just didn't see it coming. And it took me a while to recognize that that was part of my life path or my life purpose. And so you might be getting hits in your psyche about you doing something that might not make rational sense to your mind. Who the hell am I to write a book? You might be getting inspiration from your heart and your soul that might not make any sense to your mind, to your ego. But here's a really simple thing you can do. You want to kick your own ass? You want to kick your own ass in a very loving way? Get a bunch of post-it notes and put one by the bed and put one in the kitchen and one in the car. And typically, you'll be doing something else. You'll be washing the dishes. You'll be unloading the car. And a single sentence will pop in your mind. Write a book. Okay, stop. Stop washing the dishes. Stop unloading the car. And write down that sentence verbatim. Don't edit it. Don't minimalize it. Don't trivialize it. Write it down as you heard it. Write a book. Well, damn. Now it's ink on paper. Now it's got some survivability. But what happens many, many, many times is we get inspiration, write a book, and then our ego grabs hold of that and starts smacking it around and throwing it on the ground and stomping on it, and now it's gone. It's gone. It done run off. But when you write it down, you bring permanence to it. Ink on paper. Ink on paper will kick your ass. So over the weeks and months, you're going to get inspiration. What you're literally doing is you're creating a portal of heart and soul intentions. With a pen and a piece of paper, you're creating a portal of information from your heart and your soul to come into your life and actually have a chance of surviving. If you don't write it down, your mind won't let it stick around. But ink on paper takes care of that in a flash. Damn, how cool is that? Ink is powerful stuff. So over weeks, over months, if you keep doing this, you're going to start accumulating notes to yourself. And it's like you're heart and your soul is saying, well, why don't we head over this way? Why don't we head over that way? And it's literally changing your life trajectory. Here I am now, like, you know, 14 years into a spiritual podcast. Who the hell saw that coming? I certainly didn't. Teach enlightenment, teach Christ consciousness, teach how to embody source consciousness. What? Me? Well, pretty much, yeah. And so what'll happen is as your mind learns the value of the information on these pieces of paper, it doesn't happen quickly, perhaps, maybe with some perhaps. When you start to honor these inspirations with your thoughts, choices, and actions, then a very deep sense of fulfillment, a very deep sense of satisfaction, not at an ego level, but at a very deep heart and soul level, a very deep satisfaction shows up in your life that you couldn't create any other way. Your heart and your soul don't feel satisfied unless you honor you, you. And these pieces of paper is a quick and simple way for you to honor who you are, why you're here, and that'll change your experience of your life. Well, here you are now. You've joined us through the episode. I applaud you, the listener. You are why we do all this. Thanks for showing up for yourself, and thanks for joining us tonight. It's been a pleasure. Until next time. This has been a New Human Living broadcast. If you're looking for spiritual resources, there's literally hundreds of podcasts just like this one, free online. You can find them at newhumanliving.com. If you sign up for the newsletter, I write a weekly blog that helps you contemplate the nature of nature, contemplate the nature of your own human genome, contemplate your own human potential. How powerful is that? I can say it's powerful because you are powerful. I want to thank you for joining us in tonight's broadcast. I appreciate you, the listener. Until next time, thanks for listening.